So I wanted to start my talk just to let people know I'm an organizer and an artist. I'm not an economist, but I've done some research on this topic of KIFTA or SIFTA. I find the Zionists call it SIFTA and organizers here have been calling it KIFTA. You called it SIFTA. That's a whole other thing. But I wanted to open with talking a bit about my name, which is Rina. It's a Hebrew name. And I thought I could share this story with you in order to locate myself in this movement. I was named after my great-grandmother, who had a Yiddish name. Her name was Freda. She came from Poland. She immigrated through Britain and came to Canada. And my parents wanted to honor her when they named me, but rather than use her Yiddish name and honor our diasporic history and our history outside of what is now known as the State of Israel, they chose to translate her Yiddish name into Hebrew and name me that. So I see that as my legacy and my responsibility to name this state as an apartheid state, to talk about BDS as a national strategy as we're doing today, but also as an incredibly local and personal strategy. So I have a couple of transparencies. If we could start with the history. I'm just gonna talk very briefly about the history of the Canada-Israel Free Trade Agreement. Just to give you a little primer, I used my Jewish privilege to interview the education director at the Canada-Israel Committee, and he's actually a paid employee whose job and function is to educate young Jews like myself about KIFTA and related things, SIFTA and related things. So just going through it, and I think this is key because we are trying to build a movement. What I learned was that the way this free trade agreement started was that small business people, mostly men in the early 30s and 40s, started saving money and donating them to Zionist causes. That's actually how this started. That's the progression of this. So if we just quickly go through it, before 1948, early Zionists were developing the beginnings of an export economy, and they did this through the structures of British Mandate, colonial and capitalist functions in British Mandate Palestine. The late 40s and early 50s, Canadian Jews privately invested in Israeli companies, and there was no interest at that level, government interest, no tax rebates or charitable status discussed. And that private investment continued in the 60s and 70s. And in fact, Canadian companies did help to establish a number of Israeli companies and create joint ventures, which we still see today under functional SIFTA accord. And then in the 1973 OPEC boycott, which is a whole sort of subtopic of history that I think is really useful for us as organizers to learn about, but I'm going to have to sort of gloss over it because of the nature of time. Canada had a specific role in that. Because we're actually a net exporter of oil, we could continue to support the American economy that was being boycotted by OPEC. The first organized body for lobbying the government to invest in Israel was called the Canada-Israel Chamber of Commerce. And Nav, I really appreciated your intro and talking about avoiding that Zionist conspiracy, but I have to say, in doing my research, all those names that we sort of think of within that context came up, and this was an organization started by the Rothschilds, and it is actually they're trying to reinvigorate it and launch it again in Ottawa now, so we should keep our eyes and ears open for that. And then with Madrid, basically the international climate changed and it became possible to push through the Zionist lobby, which was now quite developed and well-funded, a kind of free trade agreement. And the first one that was a pilot project is CERDF, and that stands for the Canada-Israel Industrial... I'll have to find that later. Does anyone know the acronym? Oh, great. I told myself to put it there, and I'm glad I did. Canada-Israel Industrial Research and Development Fund. And that was a pilot project that focused just on IT. So as we know, a lot of the investment right now in Israel focuses on IT technologies, biotech technologies, and agribusiness technologies. And this CERTIF was the forerunner to that. And that was until 93. And SIFTA went through many stages. And as organizers, I think what's really key when we're looking at building a national campaign is noticing how these things went through Parliament, because it started as a lobby effort and ended up being a free trade agreement. And there was 4 years that passed in the interim. So one thing that I think we need to think about is keeping our eyes and ears to the ground and knowing when is appropriate to protest on a federal level. And when is appropriate to organize on local levels, and how we can build links between those two things. So as you see here, it was debated through Parliament and went through in 1997. And just last year, CERTIF was renewed. So that still exists as its own separate document and entity, and it was renewed when Ehud Barak came to visit in 2005. So that's just a super quick history on it. I wanted to say that if you don't know much about SIFTA, it is a full-fledged free trade agreement. So it includes all sectors of industry, with the exception of textiles in Canada and agriculture in Israel. That means export products, not agricultural technologies. Its goal is to remove all trade barriers over time, so basically to create a huge duty-free store between Canada and Israel. That's the goal of it, and to promote preferred trade with Israel for Canadian companies. It involves tax incentives for Canadian companies. It encourages investments, links Canadian and Israeli companies together in partnership. And like most free trade agreements, it has little or no human rights standards. It is, as you mentioned, one of only three free trade agreements Canada has. And these human rights standards include child labor and environmental regulations. There's none of that in SIFTA. Interestingly enough, it also has subcomponents with provinces. It has subcomponents specifically with Quebec, Alberta, and Manitoba. They're negotiating one with Newfoundland that specifically relates to oceanic technologies. And we have one with Ontario, thanks to Dalton McGuinty, that focuses on science and technology and real estate. So another thing as organizers, when we're thinking about organizing locally, provincially, nationally, we want to actually speak to the specifics of how it's affecting us regionally. The way that it works sort of in reverse is that Israel needs Canadian products like wood, food exports, and particularly construction materials and equipment. Those construction materials, as we know from the Caterpillar boycott, are used in the demolition of Palestinian homes, in the construction of checkpoints, and in building the Trans-Israel Highway, which is currently started for construction. So SIFTA represents $1 billion Canadian dollars annually, and I'm not an economist, but we can all imagine what that represents both ways. I wanted to speak for a moment about the military components of SIFTA, and I'm hoping that, am I doing okay? No, we don't have to change it. You can leave it up, because I assume it'll take people a while to absorb that information. It certainly did for me. So military development-wise, Canada benefits from Israeli military development in many ways. This includes weapons manufacturing, explosives, nuclear technologies, and all of these are industries that are destructive to the planet, as we all know. Canadian firms collaborated with Israeli military researchers in developing what for me is like a horrific science fiction concept. It's called the Guardium Autonomous Security Vehicle. This is a vehicle used for perimeter security. It's basically a new high-tech tank developed by Israel and Canada. And it's used in security and surveillance against civilians. So that obviously this means the apartheid wall and checkpoints, etc. But that could just as easily be used at Six Nations, anywhere in Canada that we might be having some problems. And we need to think about that in terms of you know, the movement towards a police state, basically, where we're using military technologies to monitor and suppress public dissent. So we got to think about that. And the other way that military development is involved is that in Cold Lake, Alberta, there was an actual agreement made by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, with the Canadian Army to do training exercises. So the IDF did come to Alberta and trained there in conjunction with the Canadian military. And this just, for me, highlights the parallels between this stolen land and that stolen land and the way that they're training each other and helping each other as well. We probably all know the Ontario Chief of Police went to Israel and showed them our training strategies. And we have protested and organized around that, which I think is wonderful, and we should really continue those kinds of efforts. In terms of settlement products, I just wanted to highlight a small but very important point that SIFTA intentionally includes products made in settlements, the illegal outposts, from being included in duty-free. Israel has many free trade agreements, and the ones that it has with EU countries does not include settlement products, so there was a deliberate effort on the part of Canadian Zionists to include settlement products. I asked myself when I was researching this, how does Palestine fit into this picture? And interestingly enough, SIFTA does include free trade with Palestine. But as we all know, trade and investment is much less attractive to capitalists in Canada who want to be making money off their investments, because at this moment, due to apartheid in Palestine, it's unstable, less developed. The structures of apartheid prevent equitable development in Palestine, and they prevent economic growth and international competitiveness. Basically, the Palestinian market can't afford Canadian exports, and that's another form of economic apartheid. So it's interesting when we're talking about, you know, a national campaign to also look at what kind of economic apartheid is functioning. And I think we need to talk more about that. I'm just going to speed up because I only have a few minutes left, and I did want to pose some questions for the audience to think about, because I'm hoping this can be some kind of dialogue of building a national campaign, although the room structure of the room might prevent it. But I also wanted to talk for a quick moment about the United Jewish Appeal. If you travel up and down Bathurst Street, you'll see those signs that support the United Jewish Appeal. Their current campaign is Together with Israel, Together as One. You'll see a Canadian flag and an Israeli flag. For anyone like me who travels on Bathurst Street fairly often, it's so enraging, it's so disempowering. It's not only on synagogue lawns, it's on apartment building lawns. It's at the corner of Bathurst and Eglinton. So I wanted to just let you know that the United Jewish Appeal is connected to the UIA, the United Israel Appeal Federations Canada. And I put the addresses and phone numbers when I know, just because I think we need to think about that in terms of organizing and as organizers. They have a small amount of their budget devoted to four different Zionist agencies, which are basically connected to settlement. So they're looking to recruit Zionists all over the world to move to Israel and to populate it. And we all know that that's in order to prevent any kind of secular state, any kind of right of return for Palestinian refugees. So I wanted to just show you guys this as a tree. The Canada Council for Israel and Jewish Advocacy, as I mentioned, is a key funder in the SIFTA Accord, Canada-Israel Committee. These are all downtown, and we even passed by it when we were at our demo in August. So this is a building to target for sure, and we need to talk about that. They share offices with the Canadian Jewish Congress. And I brought a bunch of propaganda from the United Jewish Appeal, so please feel free to come and look at it, see where they're sending their money. They're very clear and explicit about it. To conclude, I just wanted to pose some questions to the audience. We're all organizers, and I'm sure we all have different levels of involvement and burnout, but for me, questions of economics can be quite overwhelming because the function of capitalism feels so much more powerful than the function of social justice. So I just wanted to pose that question to the audience. How do we overcome that hugeness, that sense of sometimes helplessness that we might feel in our movement? How do we retain hope and feel effective in the face of what we know to have been a squashed anti-globalization movement. Because when we protest CIFTA, we're protesting globalization. It is a form of our anti-globalization movements, and we need to build the movement using those terms. How do we build resources for knowing about these deals, as I mentioned earlier, and in entering the process when it's effective to do so? At this point, CIFTA is 10 years old. Is it an option for us to open it up? Is there enough, you know, human mobility possible in this country to say, to protest this free trade agreement and end it? I'd like to hope that there is. And last but not least, I need us to talk about investing in Palestinian economies, because the part of the power of a BDS strategy is also to invest in Palestinian economies and to build that movement and help it grow. So that is a few questions I wanted to pose, and hopefully we can discuss them after the panel. Thank you so much, and this has been a wonderful conference, so I'm proud to speak.